Warning, the following ZipRecruiter radio spot you are about to hear is going to be filled with F-words.
When you're hiring, we at ZipRecruiter know you can feel frustrated, forlorn even, like your efforts are futile, and you can spend a fortune trying to find fabulous people, only to get flooded with candidates who are just fine. Fortunately, ZipRecruiter figured out how to fix all that. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ziprecruiter.com/zip. With ZipRecruiter, you can forget your frustrations because we find the right people for your roles fast, which is our absolute favorite F word. In fact, 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day.
Fantastic.
So, whether you need to hire 4, 40, or 400 people, get ready to meet first-rate talent. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/zip to try ZipRecruiter for free. Don't forget, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. Finally, that's ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Dude, that's Smiley Kaufman for 61. Wow.
I'm Smiley Kaufman, and this is The Smiley Show.
Welcome back to another episode of The Smiley Show, a belated 4th of July. Happy 4th of July to you. As you can tell, I'm still traveling on the back end of travel. Obviously, the in-laws in Pennsylvania. That's why I'm stationed in their little office here. Smiley back at home in Birmingham, Alabama. And Smiley, it was a good little holiday week there for both of us in terms of getting out on the course. We got some pics of a Muni excursion in the Alabama area. So I think let's just get started right there. We saw some good scores. I believe you were low 60s. What was the impetus behind going to play this course on the 4th of July week?
We either play this course on 4th of July or Memorial Day weekend, depending on, you know.
What's the name of the course, by the way?
We call it TPC Highlands, but it's actually just Highland Park. I don't think it's in Muni. I think it's actually Troon Golf runs it now, but it's a 5,800-yard golf course.
Is this the one where AV has the gripe about like one of the hole constructions? Like he doesn't like the way one of the holes is routed? Do I have that right?
Ooh, I don't think so. I think that's probably another one.
I don't know. Okay.
Because Highlands is perfect. Nothing wrong with her.
I love it.
She's great. But it does get a little backed up the later in the day that you play. You know, these tee times are
as meanies do.
It's, you know, I think there's 7-minute intervals and the first hole's a drivable par 4. So it typically gets a little backed up right at the get go. But this year we decided, hey, let's play early so that when we finish, you know, we run right into lunch, nap time, and then afternoon pool session. So that was the goal. And we teed off at, I think, 7:30. So it's a pretty early beer crack. You know, you're celebrating the 4th of July, so you got to get it going pretty quick. And, of course, my brother and I, we're pretty used to, you know, we need to get the hands feeling good. Like, we don't need to have any jitters out there. You know, you want to go out and play well. You don't want to be out there playing poorly. So that was definitely a part of the early part of the festivities. And yes, we had a great match. My brother and I played Robbie and Drew. Drew actually was caddy for Sepp in the week that he won in Philly.
No way.
Yeah, we talked about it on the pod when he won. But so Drew's a mini tour player, a good player, which is actually, this is the first time I've seen this, is that Lucky is a lefty, but he putts righty. Actually, he putts lefty and righty because he's got a bullseye putter. But primarily, until he starts to feel comfortable with his game, he'll primarily putt righty and hit lefty. Well, Drew also, he hits righty and putts lefty. So it was quite an interesting watching these two guys, you know, hit it. It was like watching a Nota Begays out there on Friday.
That's amazing. Also, like a very topical connection point here, because if you rule out opposite field events, Sepp Straka, one of the 4 two-plus time winners on the PGA Tour this year with a group that Brian Campbell just joined.
That's right. And also, we almost had a top 10 player in the world join us out there. We were this close to having Sepp play with us. It was so close.
So, I think I saw 64 next to your name. What would Sepp have shot out there?
Oh, gosh. I mean, I have the course record at 56.
Wow. What era of Smiley was this? Was this like LSU Smiley?
Was this, yeah, I'm going to LSU Smiley? Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. 56. I can't even fathom that.
With a bogey.
I did 7 minute tee times this morning, which was, you know, you kind of get, any way I say the next sentence is not going to come out good for me, but you just get reminded why it's nice to have 10 minute intervals back at home. I'll leave it at that. I will say, Big shout out to Muni Life. Bethlehem Muni here took Walker out to hit golf balls multiple times, like a little exec nine-holer course, small greens. So you're working on like really focused and aimed well approach shots. And I was like, you know what? It's good to get out here with the people. Untuck the shirt, play some tunes.
Jackson's literally throwing tomatoes at you right now. He doesn't believe this.
He is. No, this is from the heart. It's just good to get out on 4th of July weekend and just really, what's more American than playing municipal course golf? I can't even get the words out of my mouth.
It's not even authentic enough beginning to get it out.
My brain won't allow me to go there. No, that's a genuine shout out to Bethlehem Muni, genuine shout out to TPC Highlands. And a shout out to Smiley Kaufman, who holds a course record still, 56.
Well, I think if somebody's shot 55, let me know. I just assume it's the course record.
That would be 55. I just don't even know how that exists out there, but that's 56 the bogey.
Jackson just texted tomato.
Virtual tomatoes being thrown.
Luck and I, we brother-in-law'd it so well. I think we had a best ball 60 and we won 4-3. And poor Drew, you know, he's a really good player. He shot 61 and didn't even make it to the 16th hole. You know, that just sucks for him.
Wow. Didn't make it to the 16th hole.
Yep. So four, lucky four shot
three?
67.
Three, or 3-2?
What's that? Yeah, no, 4-3.
Four and three. Good Lord.
Yeah, I know.
That's good ham and egg.
It was really good ham and egg. And lucky got four strokes out there. And he played well. He definitely played well in his stroke holes. And we brother-in-law'd it nice. Robbie shot 67 too. So like everybody played pretty well. And then Luck and I, okay, here's another handicap situation that happened at Vestavia the following day. So we had 16 of us, four different groups. And in the past, when I've played in this game, we've stroked off of zero. And I've had to give strokes back on my scorecard. So for instance, like the easiest hole in the course,
not fun.
If I made a birdie, it would be a par. And I was like, guys, let's not do this. Everybody else gets more strokes. So if I make a birdie, it's a birdie because it's silly to have to give a stroke back. I'd rather just other people have more strokes. So we do this on Saturday and AV, he didn't play with us, but he counted out how many strokes were given out. There was 179 strokes given out to 15 other players. And so I'm thinking to myself, how in the world is this system fair? So we want to get to a point to where we're doing dogfight points. And that's like besides the story I'm about to tell, because a guy in our group, a guy named PV, had one of the most epic rally, this career round. He's struggling when he shows up and I'm thinking, he's not going to play well. Like he's an 80s shooter, maybe shooting the 90s. I haven't played with him much, but I tell you what, I wasn't expecting a good round of golf from him. He was getting 17 strokes and was even par with three to play.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. That guy's, the handicap committee's looking into that guy. That's, as a handicap committee chair, that's a, I'm doing a running on his profile.
So he shot a 74 and won by eight shots in our gross net game. And I think our team won by at least 10 because he played really well. And then I shot 29 on our backside. So it was just an absolute blitz.
Well, here's the thing is 74 getting 17. This is not a math pod, but I think that still net would not have broken your course record at the Highlands. I think it would have been a net 57.
We've been doing all these memes and stuff. Like this is like what we're setting today. Like I should join the tour. If you're watching on YouTube, you can see it. There's another one here too. Hold on. It's him walking down the 18th fairway at Tour Championship. I mean, it was just epic. So shout out to my boy, phenomenal. Pat. Epic day watching him having a career day. And like I always say, Charlie, this is the time of year where you start to, this is career low season. It's the greens are make speed. And I mean, this is the same time last year you shot 66.
That's exactly right. It was in August, and I'm starting to kind of feel the game come back a little bit. Like, you know, it's I think this is when I peak. I think I've started to kind of chart some data here. I think this is when I might go low when I get back in town. Although we're getting like, I looked at the forecast this week. I was excited to get back and play with the buddies on Friday. I don't think it's going to stop raining. No, it's just thunderstorms. Solid for a whole week. Yeah. So yeah,
I'll tell you what. That's the thunderstorms are definitely winning the fall and summer, or I should say the spring, late spring and early summer.
Yeah, it's a tough scene for anyone who's trying to play golf in the South at a place that, you know, where the drainage leaves something to be desired. But I'll say, listen, I hope a lot of people out there also got to tee it up for a 4th of July weekend. If you're watching on YouTube, throw some little match stories in the comments as well. Now that we got Smiley's kind of full rundown.
Do y'all use dogfight points?
Dogfight points, explain.
Like a Stableford system to where you don't go off of handicap as much, to where you take an average of a dogfight, like your points that you're supposed to get for the day. So for instance, let's say your points that you have to hit are 35. And based off of that number, let's say you go out and only hit 30 points, so you're 5 below that number. And I'm pretty sure how it works is then you add up your group total. So all of your three guys that are in your group also have these numbers they have to hit. And based off of the number that is set, you know, if they go over or under, you add up your entire group. And that's how you decide who would win the group bet against team versus team. So you kind of eliminate the handicap thing because you take a sample size of maybe the last 10 rounds that you've had with the amount of points that you've accumulated, and you take that average, and that's your points that you have to go and get. So you use a Stableford. So like birdies are probably 3, pars are 2. I assume bogeys are 1 point, doubles are 0 points, eagles 4 or 5 or something.
Yeah. I played Stableford before. Dogfight points sounds like a ton of math, like just,
well, you need a book.
Saying that, like, I was like the meme,
like you need
all the algebra equations.
Well, you need a book. You need somebody to be able to keep everybody's numbers throughout the year. It's a lot of work. If you actually have time to sit in the men's grill and keep the book after, mm-hmm. It's probably built for groups that have time to have 2 beers after versus 1 beer. I think that's probably the defining deal, whether you can have dogfight points or not, because it definitely takes, you know, a book or somebody's, you know, notes app to be able to keep it organized, because that is difficult. Handicaps are a lot easier for sure.
I think the closest thing we do to that is like that 40 ball game I've told you about, where you take 20 in the front, 20 in the back, 40 overall with the playing as a team, as a foursome, and then tally those up in the old Ross grill on the back end, see who won. But you got to take the scores on the whole. See, there's like a gamble there of like, you know, we made three pars. Do we only want to take two, leave some out there, make some birdies?
I like that, though.
It's good. It's a good game. It's a game that's worth playing if you got, you know, a bunch of foursomes lined up to play on a Friday back home.
Y'all do handicap with that, too?
We do handicap with that. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, that's the problem when you have 179 strokes. We're just trying to find a solution.
Yeah, I mean, you can do like 85%. You could do 12-month low. I just played back-to-back weekends prior to this 12-month low tournaments where I got absolutely slaughtered because my 12-month low is 0.7 and I'm currently playing like a 4.1. So it was no bueno for your boy. But I think that it was an interesting study because at least the first one at Hope Valley, the best players ended up at the top of that leaderboard. And it's like, okay, like they probably deserve to win. You know, if you're playing the best golf that weekend, you would love a 12-month low setup for you. Although you don't keep a handicap, so you just kind of keep a floating +4 or +5 or something like that, right?
Yeah. I mean, I just don't like keeping score every single time. Like sometimes I'm like, I'll keep score today. Sometimes I don't. And a lot of times it's just the game and you know, that you're playing that day against. You know, it's like, did we win the match or not? And that's kind of how I play golf.
We need to, and this is something we've talked about doing on a number of occasions, is like we need to have a USGA, a gin expert come on and help us better unpack the handicaps.
Oh, totally. Like
there are some key flaws here that we can really drill down on. Shall we talk about some PGA Tour golf to get this started, Smiley? I don't know a good way to launch into this, really, because it's with all due respect to a man who's now won twice on tour this year. It is very hard to win once on tour. It's very hard to win twice on tour. It's even harder to win twice on tour in the same season. But Brian Campbell is not necessarily a headliner name. He is a guy that, when I last checked, is like 131st on tour this year in strokes gained off the tee. He's averaging about 276 yards off the tee. And it's a very interesting juxtaposition, Smiley, of both the playoff he won when he won back in the Mexico Open against the longest player on tour, Aldrich Podgieter. And then now back-to-back weeks where Aldrich Podgieter wins the Rocket Classic, then we go over and play the John Deere, and Brian Campbell emerges victorious in yet another playoff against Emiliano Grillo. But I want to give Brian Campbell his props here, right? So let's start with, what are the things, are we potentially underrating the things that Brian Campbell does really, really well because it is so hard to win twice on tour? And I feel like this is a little bit of a rerun of the same situation we had at the end of Oakmont, at the end of the U.S. Open, where we were talking about Ben Griffin, Andrew Novak, Matt McNeely this whole year, and we completely forgot about a J.J. Spawn. Are we overlooking a part of Brian Campbell's game that is really, really good that's led him to these two wins that's worth talking about?
Yeah, you definitely are. I would love to actually look up to see where he ranks on the PGA Tour in driving accuracy. He's got to be in the top 10. I'd be surprised if he wasn't. But that's used to be the formula to playing well on the PGA Tour before the Baum and Gallagher really became about. You know, you had a guy like Tim Clark winning every year. That's the type of player that he is, a really very straight player. You know, Brian Gay, another example. I know he's gotten a little farther of the years, but Brian Campbell's comes from that similar tree of just, yeah, he doesn't hit it very far, but he hits it really straight. And guess what? On weeks that, you know, the soft greens and he's able to attack a little bit more. And John Deere, this golf course was a little faster than it normally is. So, you know, it didn't get quite as much rain as you'd have the thunderstorms that are, you know, wearing this golf course out normally year in and year out. But it was bouncing pretty good this year, and the rough was up a little bit. And I think that helped. It had to help. And even just looking at the scores too, from one year to the next, you know, last year Davis Thompson won this event at 28 under par. So this thing finishing at 18 under par only helps a player like Brian Campbell too.
Yeah, and it was interesting to see that some of those scores, you know, some early, I think it was Max Homa shot his lowest ever first round score on tour of 8 under, maybe 62, something like that. But then guys that would post a really low round and then kind of come back to the mean the next day. And then you got the sort of mix of guys, because I did think it was going to be a mid-20s winning score based on what we saw this last year. And it wasn't that way this year.
You know what was weird too, is if you followed the cut line this week and you saw where it finished, it was a flat 65 guys that made the cut, and it was at 5 under par. Very unusual. If you saw a 5 under par and I asked you coming into the week, okay, that's what the cut was, what do you think the winning score was? Well, you would say, well, if it was a 5 under cut, I would have said that maybe it was a, you know, somewhere in the low 20s. I would say 23 under par was a winning score. The fact that 5 under par was a cut and 18 under par was the winning score, a little surprising.
Yeah, without a doubt. Now, do you, I don't want to take 1 week at TPC Deer Run and try to extrapolate some large, you know, these game insights of like where we stand on the game based off of just this one winner. But, you know, we talk a lot about distance in the game, and we talk a lot about, you know, needing to roll the ball back and certain courses, you know, some that cater to bombers, other that, you know, guys who are shorter can win. Now you have a guy like Brian Campbell who's won twice on tour this year. And do you take any large grand insights about distance in the game away from that? Or is it just this guy had two really good weeks and he did some things that were a little bit underrated and got it done. And that's just, let's commend him. But there are no kind of large things to take away from that.
I mean, a takeaway is again, for me as a professional, former professional golfer, I just got to give the guy a ton of props. I mean, it's got to be a little daunting now every time you stand on the tee box and playing with a young gun Podgieter. He's got 190 ball speed every time he tees up, and you're barely, you know, making a dent in the golf ball in the 160s. You know, that's got to be an intimidating thing to try to make a living with the, you know, the best players in the world, to try to keep a card, only 100 PGA Tour cards at the end of the year. So coming into this season, you know, his first PGA Tour season, it would have been easy for him to overswing, to not play within himself. But I'll say this, players that get that first win and they're in this different category definitely have, you know, it feels like you have house money. There's nothing to worry about. You have a job. So you guess what? You get to go get better at things that maybe you would try to fix, where he's kind of played his own game. And remember too, like he played good in two majors this year. He played good in Augusta, he played good in Quail. So I think what I need to do with you is I need to send you out and have you go watch him at the Wyndham and just say, you know what? Respect, Brian. This is really impressive because he hits a lot of fairways, a lot of greens. And I think a lot of players that we talk about often would love to have the control of the golf ball that he does.
And on this show, we are consistent about the fact that we love to be proven wrong, and we will put our hand up and tell you when we have been proven wrong. We did the same with JJ Spahn at the U.S. Open, and here it's, you know, let's give Brian Campbell his props. And I thought even there a couple moments today that really were distinguishing elite, you know, winning on tour moments, regardless of who is striking the ball and how long it's going, were makes that double at 15. And then on 17 comes back, and I'm looking at shot link now. His drive on 17, the par five, was 273 yards, and his second shot was 277 yards. An incredible, I think it was a 7-wood in there.
I don't think that was the 7-wood. There's no way he could hit 7-wood.
You said in the text. I was going to say 277. Yeah. So then makes birdie there and ends up posting 18 under. And then that playoff where, you know, Grillo, even having knocked into the trees on the right, is still 20 yards ahead of him. And we're looking at his line. He's kind of got, you know, is on the edge of a sprinkler there. And they're thinking, hey, maybe he plays one out safe 30 to 40 feet on the right. And he goes right of the pin, and Grillo, of course, gives it to him by making a bogey. But, you know, that shot would have
was a cool
given
shot
him a look at a birdie.
Too.
Oh, it was so well done. So props to Brian Campbell, and see you at Wyndham.
Do you think if the year was 2032 and the Ryder Cup was at Olympic Club, would you be thinking about Brian Campbell?
Let's just fast forward
a two-time winner, Brian Campbell, and a player like him comes on your desk, and you say, "Well, gosh, well, this guy would hit every fairway at Olympic Club. I would have to take him." But at Bethpage, it's not even a starting conversation.
Well, you know, you just pair him up with a Bryson DeChambeau, and you're good money there.
We're going to talk about some of this stuff later on in this episode, but here, let me forecast this one to you.
Okay,
I'm just going to just picture this: Brian Campbell, Tour Championship winner, FedEx Playoff winner, in an East Lake finale in a year in which there's no starting strokes. Since we're not embracing a fun format, I'm embracing just
chaos,
wild card situation. Can you imagine Pontevedra if they have Brian Campbell coming down the stretch on 18, which, by the way, that would be awesome if he did. Let's not act like I wouldn't be a fan of this, but that would be cinema.
Would love it. I'm here for it. I am the Jack Nicholson departed gift, nodding my head, looking mischievous. Yes, that is what we need and want. If we're going to change the Tour Championship format, I want it to be an absurd out of nowhere winner, and I want all the chaos and the back end debate that comes with that. So I sign me up for that.
Yes, we need more things to talk about into debate, and that would really definitely set up some nice talking points.
That would do it. That would do it for me. I'll say another big, we missed out on a big, big talking point. I think it's very fair to say, Brian Campbell will probably even tell you this, that today the rooting favorite amongst the crowd and people tuning in on TV, probably Max Homa.
Yeah,
probably Max Homa. And Max, it comes up short, I think two shots short that playoff at 16 under. I think that put him in solo fifth last time I checked the leaderboard. A lot of talk about Max's, you know, just season at large. And we've talked, golly, since we had Max on the show about just the swing changes he was grinding on. He showed us some video way back when. I think he switched coaches since. You know, new equipment, just a lot of different things going on for him. And there's been a little bit of armchair analysis about, you know, what it is Max is doing differently in his swing and what got him into contention this week at TPC Deer Run. What are you seeing that looks different for Max, for you, and maybe in the swing or any other observations you made about the mental side of the game, whatever else comes to mind in terms of why he's playing better golf.
I think his iron swing looked really good this week. It just looked like his arms and the golf club were more out in front of him. That helped him be able to get the ball started left and actually hit a fade. You know, just those little fewer fade shots. I haven't seen him be quite as good with those this year. If anything, to me, he's had a two-way miss with his iron game. He's missed greens left with left pins, which I saw that happened often earlier in the year when I was watching him. But it's not surprising, though, to me that the driver actually has been pretty good this year, which you wouldn't think would make sense. But because you have more time and the club is, you know, if it's a little behind you a little bit, you do have more time to kind of get it squared up. But the shorter clubs, especially when you want to hit some of those feel shots, you're going to be, you know, you're going to have some two way misses there. So it looked like he was swinging the golf club better this week. And most certainly, yes, the crowd favorite and definitely the biggest name I felt like heading into this week, and one that I'm sure that the tour would have loved, Max Homa won, and as well as John Deere. And I definitely was rooting for him as well, because it has been a hard year. It's surprising really to me to see that he was, you know, outside the top 100 coming into the week. That really did surprise me, because it doesn't seem like too long ago that you and I were making cases of, well, if he played really well at this major, you know, pulled this one out, you know, he's got a chance to be in the Ryder Cup conversation. I think I'm just replaying those conversations in my head. And then I see where he's at on the FedEx Cup, which isn't a barrier to necessarily of where somebody lands on the Ryder Cup point standings list. But it did surprise me a lot to see that he is currently out of the top 100, I believe. I don't know where he jumped to, but it's right around that number.
Yeah, I want to say it was 122 on a stat sheet I saw heading into the week.
Finished T3 this week, so let's see. That got him two. I got it right here. He is 98th now.
98th. And I believe his Farmers win was 23. Is that correct? Would that exemption expire? I believe so. I think Farmers was the last win.
This would be his last PGA Tour exempt season then.
And he was top 50 last year. I'm not going to get into the minutia of those categories and what sort of eligibility.
Year on a tour championship stuff.
Dylan DeChair did a great write up that you could go find on golf.com. Where all the exemptions. Now, the one that we were talking about, and I need to tee it up here via our friends at Ahead. We're going to do a little Ryder Cup look ahead as it pertains to both Max and a few others. Ahead is a strategic partner for enterprise clients, helping them navigate the path toward digital transformation, much like an expert caddy, reading the course ahead and providing the winning combination of technology and execution. You can learn more at ahead.com. Ryder Cup look ahead. Let's start with just if Max doesn't win today, right? So he is definitely on the outside looking in, both in points qualification, but also just in terms of probably the guys that Keegan's considering in terms of those six picks he's going to make. If Max had won today, in your mind, where does he move to on Keegan's picks shortlist?
If he would have won,
if he'd won the John Deere,
he had to win, I think, to be in the bubble conversation. I don't think he's in any conversation right now.
So he's in or around. Like, I mean, are you lumping him in? Is he still a tier below, like a Ben Griffin, Andrew Novak, Maverick McNealy? Like he's further down the bubble than those guys, even if he wins today.
He's got to win down the stretch, and he doesn't need to finish outside the top five. And that would get him on the bubble, and maybe he's a partner for somebody. He's got to have luck go his way as far as just who he would be partnered with. Like, it's got to really look good on the sheet of paper in front of the captains. But I don't see a scenario that he's on the team, but I would love to be proved wrong. I just think he's too far out. I think the scenario that you can play back is Justin Thomas missing the playoffs a couple of years ago, making that Ryder Cup team in Rome. Max has a, you know, potential opportunity to be in that same situation, but maybe plays his way into the playoffs, which I think is what he has to do. If he plays his way into the playoffs, and all of a sudden now you get hot at the right time, and next thing you know, you're at the tour championship, and that's where it gets really, really difficult for somebody like Keegan, because you got to you got to definitely weigh the whole year versus, you know, just a hot stretch. Billy Horschel is a good example of that. But, you know, Max has been solid. He's been probably one of the best, you know, U.S. players over the last couple of years.
Not qualified for the Open Championship and not playing the Scottish Open either. So the next crack at it he gets, I guess, is 3M. And then
he's not playing Wyndham. Scottish.
I'm looking at the field list right now, unless there's some sort of typo. I'm looking at it jumps from the Højgaard brothers to Rikuya Hoshino. So it looks like an alphabetical list to me, Smiley. So not that in that alphabetical field list from the PGA Tour. It does. It really does because
they
I
got
think
a flight
that there
from
are,
there. You know, you can hop on the flight literally from John Deere and.
Which, by the way, I saw another headline on that. It's the first time in tour history that it's a full flight from John Deere over to the Scottish, full charter flight. So,
well, I know they're having,
and that connects to a whole other thing is like, I think what they were meaning by that sort of news item was just that, and we can unpack this as when we talk about the tour changes, tour championship stuff, but just that these fields, these midsummer fields are getting stronger as more and more guys who are now on the 100 bubble to the 125 bubble.
It was a better field, yeah.
Are needing to play. So it's interesting how it all folds in together. I mean, Max at 98 now, you know, needs to do a lot. But essentially what you're saying there is that he's got two starts, right? Yeah, I mean, if he plays 3M and Wyndham, those are his last two cracks to get top 70.
Let's just use an example this week. You know, he finishes T3 with Kevin Roy, moves up 24 spots. That would get him to... Let's see. I mean, here's a little bit of math here for you. That get him to 74. He's still on the outside looking in. And then he needs another good week just to crack it in there. I mean, playoffs are a long shot right now.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder how, you know, I don't know when this commit list, you know, more about the inner workings of the tour, about, you know, when he has to kind of say yes or no
Friday.
To the Scottish Open. Friday.
Friday 5, I think is the deal.
I mean, I wonder how he feels after he goes out and he shoots a great first round and hopefully expects that to continue throughout the week, you know, at John Deere into the weekend. You know, do you feel like now you're going to take 2 weeks off and you're kind of losing the hot hand you had? Or do you think
dude, the Scottish Open gives spots to the Open Championship too, typically.
They do.
So like there's another opportunity to get into that field. So it's just very, very surprising. So that maybe we can get an answer on that for the next episode. But that's definitely very surprising. And then really didn't really like tie the bow on exactly what happened with Max today. Because if you watch him, it was very close. Because when he got started, we're like, sound the alarms, the buzzers. He's 300 through four holes. Yep. And you're like, he's going to win this golf tournament. But playing this golf course, he missed the fairway 5. It's like one of the key fairways you got to hit. Makes an easy bogey there. Catches a flyer at 9. And really, he three-putts the 15th hole. And then 16, 17, 18. He makes that nice putt at 16. But misses three putts inside of 10 feet over the last four holes. And loses the tournament by 2 shots. And then you throw in just like a, you know, a wedge shot. You know, he kind of hit a... missed the fairway kind of at the 10th hole on a layup on the par 5. So there were just things that were, it was so close. Like you feel like he could have done it today. And it was such a good opportunity. Of course, Max was the guy that everybody looked at on that leaderboard as the guy that probably you'd be the most scared of.
I mean, today, kind of to those points, 52nd in the field in strokes gained putting, 53rd in strokes gained around the green. Brian Campbell, I just love this, 62nd strokes gained off the tee for the week. But 6th in strokes gained putting, 10th around the green, and 8th in approach. And that's how you win a tournament, ladies and gentlemen.
Hold on. Did you see that Brian Campbell after his round? So he was, I believe, the second or third to last group. And he goes in and just sits and watches the coverage. Doesn't go hit golf balls.
Not hit golf balls.
And Amanda asked him after the round or after the playoff. And they're like, yeah, I just want to rest. And all I was thinking, I was like, even if he went and did, like, let's say you did go and hit golf balls and say lose, how much more ball speed is he actually getting out of this thing? Like, is he going from like 164 to 165 just by warming up? I think the ball is going to, he's going to have a little bit of adrenaline. He's going to have a 7-iron in, so he's fine. Let him eat some cheesecake.
That's right. Well, you just said, I mean, and this is a plight that all of us playing summer golf can relate to in hot areas. Like, dude, I was hot. I was tired. I wanted to get something to eat and drink some water, drink some Gatorade.
Six stars.
Last thing I wanted to go do is hit more balls or like work on a putting drill. I was all the way with him there. Show and go for the playoff, and hits the fairway, and then hits a great little iron shot in there, and he is a two-time tour winner now. So kudos to him. Did you see briefly on Max before we wrap there the thing, his thing on Twitter earlier in the week?
No, well, say it. I mean, he's talking about how everybody's trolls on Twitter, basically.
Yeah,
is that about
effectively.
Right?
Yeah, he called it an awful place, which I tend to agree with it. I think that. I mean, I had to delete
social media for 3 years as a player. I mean, it was it was nasty. Yeah, it was awful. I understand that a lot of other people wouldn't get that because he kind of his whole bit was making fun of people, but also it was a bit because everybody wanted to be made fun of. Let's not act like he just chose one person and maybe he did, but it became his thing, which is it's not like he was just sorting out people like, oh, I can't wait to bury this guy's swing.
Yeah. I just think the mechanics of it, not that anyone cares what I think necessarily, but like X has just become, I far more enjoy the places where we get to kind of put out fuller context, you know, video dissertations where you get more context added versus a place where everyone's trying just to dump on each other. I got some nice feedback on some of our recent shows in the old DMs box. So that was like, this is why I don't use X. So thanks so much for that. You know who you are. I'll wrap on the Ryder Cup piece by just flipping to some really cool, some heartwarming news as the fifth assistant captain for Bethpage Black's been named, and it is Gary Woodland, who is it said. It's felt like a typo to me or a misprint, but I guess just maybe the timing of some of the when he was playing well, but said first Ryder Cup appearance, Gary Woodland never played on a Ryder Cup team. Do I have that correct?
He made the President's Cup at Quail Hollow, I believe is the one that he made. That was the Pebble Beach year.
Yeah, the 2019 US Open win. Yeah, so maybe it's just a timing thing, but that was a little bit surprising that he never actually played on a team.
Well, 2019, would that have been Australia? That actually sounds more
That's right. Wasn't that the one that
Tiger
captain. Yeah. So now, and I think the interesting part about that is, and I have the captains here somewhere in a link. I'm working with one screen tonight. So
Sneds, Furyk, Kisner, Gary Woodland, and
Webb Simpson. Right, so let's just talk about that group now. If Keegan ends up being a playing captain, does Furyk become the de facto non-playing captain, just given his experience on these teams and having just led the American side to a President's Cup win? I know it's lower stakes, less leverage. Do you feel like that becomes the guy who's calling the shots if Keegan's out in the course?
Well, I don't know why. I'm ready for football season, that somebody explained this to me about how the referees and the officials are decided who gets what role, like who gets to wear the white hat, who's to get the guy that gets to speak. And I think somebody told me that it was actually like kind of personality based. Like this is the person that's like best suited to do this. And I don't know how other ways they pick that white hat guy that gets to talk, but Jim Furyk kind of would fit that profile of the referee that gets to wear the white hat.
Jim Furyk's our white hat guy. If Keegan plays, he's a guy that gets the hat.
I mean, just think about it. All right, so you got Webb Simpson, like just great dude, a person that could probably go and talk to the guy who's started out the Ryder Cup day one at 0-2. Like you go put him in a quarter Webb Simpson to get him like all positive. That's Webb's role. Gary is the guy who's going to be the intimidator. He's going to be standing on tee boxes and he's ready to crush some skulls. Kiz, he's going to be drinking beers. And then you have, let's see, who's the next one? We got
Brant Snedeker.
Sneds. Yeah. He's going to be walking with whoever Sepp Straka is playing. Just kind of like a ball negator, you know, like the no shave deal. So he's also going to have his hat off to kind of negate a little bit of the glare from the top of the heads. And
yeah.
And now Jim Furyk's going to be giving speeches. If Keegan. Well,
I think it is actually kind of a really nice makeup of this team where, you know, Sneds obviously is going to captain the 26th President's Cup team at Medina. So it's a little bit of, you know, getting him in that room and experience and around those guys. Furyk obviously has experience from last year and an extensive experience being assistants on a number of these teams. And now you're really kind of starting to bed in the next group of assistants where, you know, Kiz has been an assistant for a couple times now, and now you've got Gary Woodland in the mix. I just like seeing guys that are new faces that also can are well respected amongst American players, that can really start gaining a little bit of what's it like to lead in these rooms instead of play, and then see if they can become the next captain that tries to win a Ryder Cup on foreign soil or something that's, you know, more pivotal. I think it's cool for Gary Woodland.
I think what I like too is that all these players are still playing on the PGA Tour for the most part, besides Jim. You know, the relationships in that room are going to be really solid. Keegan, obviously a player that most likely I think should be on the team. So it's important, even more important, to have really good assistant captains. And I think he's done a really good job of picking them. I have no notes.
I love it. It's cool for Gary. Smiley, that wraps our Ryder Cup segment here. I want to get to some tour stuff, but I need to show you one of the coolest videos I saw on this last week. I thought this was a really fun Open Championship qualification story. But before we can do that, Smiley, I've got a pamphlet in front of me, and it is for a 2025 Dream Ireland Golf Getaway Sweepstakes brought to you by Shipstakes. Three lucky winners are going to receive an all-expenses-paid trip for two to the island of Ireland. They're going to play six world-class courses, including Royal Portrush, host of the 2025 Open Championship. And I've got the other courses here for you as well. Portrush, Portmarnock, Royal County Down, Castle Rock, I hope I'm saying this right, Ballyliffin, and Port Stewart.
Dude, this is all part of this.
These are all six of these courses are all part of this Dream Golf Shipstakes. I'm using the wrong phrasing here. I'm going to put the link in the YouTube. I'm going to put the link in the podcast description.
Oh,
it's
man.
Sick. This is so sick.
Can we?
Yes.
Am I able to sign up or no?
I'm sure there's fine print that precludes us from participating in this thing. We can ask. We can ask. There's a whole pamphlet on this thing. We can get y'all hooked up. But basically, that's the takeaway for you. It's like, go sign up, go do this thing, because you could win via Shipstakes to play all those courses, all expenses paid, trip or two. Yeah, I don't know what else there is to say. Like, if you're looking to make a trip over across the pond, Ireland, Scotland, like, these are bucket list places to play golf, Lynx Golf. This is a pretty good deal from Shipstakes.
Yeah, it is. It's incredible. I'm going to send that out. I'm going to send it out to my boys. So actually, one of the last, it was like a getaway for like a set of irons. One of my buddies did like the tag of a couple friends, and it was like a long shot. It was actually done by the PGA Tour. It was for Strixon set of irons, and there was, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of comments of people trying to get these irons. And I get a screenshot from one of my buddies and said, "Hey, is this real?" And it was a screenshot that said from the PGA Tour, "Hey, you won the giveaway." And literally, it's like one of my boys. I'm like, how did this happen? So I know that's a story that's unrelated to Shipstakes, but it just goes to show that you could be the lucky winner too.
You're basically everyone listening or watching this podcast. You're all our friends, you know, so there you go. You might just, by the same stroke of luck, end up in Smiley's good graces and be heading off to Ireland to play some golf.
And the good news is too, we did use Shipstakes to get our clubs over there. We had, gosh, I think we had 13 of us over there, and all of us used Shipstakes to do it, and all of our golf clubs made it safe and sound. So you get that aspect too. You don't have to worry about.
That's maybe the least polished, but just most raw read we've ever done the show. It's like, here it is. Go do it. Go play golf in Ireland. It's going to be like, amazing.
What Thanks, else Shipstakes. We need to say? Yeah.
What else Jeez. We need to say? Go to the link and go sign up and do the sweepstakes. So
you should have actually started with, it's like, this isn't a read. This is a, hey, y'all don't need, like, everybody needs to tune in. This is a it's a no-brainer. Just go and do it. This is a automatic have to do it. Boom, boom, boom. Everybody understands. We move on.
Send us pics. Send us vids. We'll get them on the show.
Yeah.
Big thanks to Shipstakes. So look for that in the description, the YouTube description, the podcast description, and enter it to win. That is the tee up for I hope I'm saying his name right. Richard Teder, Richard Teeter. It's Richard T-E-D-E-R.
He's from Estonia, right? Estonia.
I think I saw this on a Monday Q Info tweet that there's only like 9 golf courses in the whole of Estonia. And
is it Estonia? Is that like where Princess Diaries is based?
Wow. Princess Diaries. I don't have a ton of knowledge base in and around Princess Diaries. I believe I've seen the movie, but I could not tell you where
that is. Is that not the country?
You know what? Well, while we're at it, Princess Diaries, Estonia. It's not set in Estonia. It's set in the fictional country of Genovia.
Genovia. Gosh, it was kind of...
In the book series, it's situated between France and Italy.
Okay, so it's a fake place. Got it.
It's filmed in England and the United States. Many of the scenes
if maybe
California.
We said he was from Geneva, that you could have said, okay, I could see how you got those two things confused.
Yeah. I mean, that would make total sense to someone who knows lots about the Princess Diaries. To me, it's still all this is lost on me.
Listen, big Julie Andrews guy. We listen to a lot of Sound of Music, and we actually were talking about it this week because it's always on in my car. Do re mi.
Were you a big musical family, or is this something Fran's brought to the equation?
Fran is 1,000% of music. She likes musical stuff. I don't mind it, actually. I was like the guy that, you know, everybody made fun of High School Musical, but I watched the premiere when it came out.
I don't think I ever saw a High School Musical. I'm talking about like the good stuff, like the old school
musical
stuff.
Do not watch it.
Yeah. I mean, I think I saw that.
Do not watch it. It is so bad.
Okay. Not even like a good bad? Like there's no value in rewatching it at all?
It's really, really tough scene.
I mean, not that I'm a guy that should be talking about jawlines, but Zac Efron. What happened to Zac Efron's jaw? Have you seen this?
Bonk?
Seen Zac Efron's jaw? No, no. I'm just saying. It's like it's his facial complexion has changed. The Zac Efron we knew and loved from
Is he like Jonah Hill?
Musical.
You just tell me like Jonah Hill?
No. Like it's like a steely. Like I think it's actually a surgically. I think he broke his jaw. I don't know how we got here. We're talking about Zac Efron's jaw. This is my own feeling. It's my own fault. Genovia.
So we hold out, huh?
Let's play the tape. Here we go. Richard.
Where is this at?
Estonia or Genovia. This is, I think it's West Lancashire.
Oh, come on.
First Estonian to ever play in the Open Championship, and that's how he gets in. Are you kidding me? That is so sick,
dude. When you go to the Walker Cup later this fall, that's the coolest thing about watching that event. I see the Cypress Point hat, is that all the crowds you just get to walk behind everybody, and that's the coolest thing about this clip is that the crowd is, you know, it's just the town crowd watching their golf course and the guy, you know, having a dream come true.
Walker Cup was at Seminole, however many years ago that was, 21, I think it was, like 2,000 people, no ropes, like you could get as close to everyone as you wanted to be. It's so cool. Agreed. And like, you know, they got the whole village out here trying to see if this Estonian dude's going to get it done. And he's in the Open, so that is a very cool story. Congrats to Richard. We're going to be pulling for him. We get to watch him here in a couple weeks. Smiley, top hole out you've ever had in your career or hole out you've ever witnessed in your career?
Shoot. That's tough. Do you have one?
That's a great question.
I'm just thinking about like Scotty shots I've seen in my lifetime.
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna give a shout out to my boy Gil Frazier here, who won a skin in the Hope Valley practice round at member guest last year, and then proceeded to shoot like 52 the next 3 or 6 rounds to just completely DFL us in the member guest. So, Gil, that skin though, that skill on 13 skin was big. We needed that one in a big way. God, so,
hole,
shout out to you, Gil.
So hole out, man. Nothing really comes to mind. I haven't had too many dramatic hole outs for myself. I've had some hole in ones, but that's a completely different category than a hole out, in my opinion. I feel like I've seen Scotty hole out some shots that are pretty cool, but nothing coming to mind. Like, what's the most dramatic hole outs that we've seen over like the last decade of golf that we've witnessed? I mean, help me come up with some. I'm just thinking of some like pitch-ins that have happened over the years. Like I think of JT's hole out on the 18th hole to get into a playoff. He eventually lost, so that kind of derails it. But still, that was a crazy hole out on the last hole.
It's now that I'm thinking about that. I mean, yeah, JT almost holed out the Wyndham to get in the playoff 2 years ago, and it came up just short. So that's obviously not a hole out.
Russell Henley pitched in at 16. It was the 16th hole. I'm just kind of going on the calendar. So Scottie Scheffler holed out in the fourth hole in the year that he won the Players. I believe that was his past year, but I don't even think that was Sunday. I think that was Saturday. Maybe it was Sunday.
Thor holed out today. Denny McCarthy, Thor, Michael Thor.
Well, people hole out all the time. I'm just thinking about when has it been on Sunday in a big time moment? Gosh, I bet people are just like, how are you forgetting this one?
Please put those in the comments. How about Denny McCarthy hold out today? Denny McCarthy's hitting the ball good this year. Like, his ball striking has been like, it's really bumped up a level to go along with his putting.
So you're saying you're going to take him somewhere?
I might have to. Maybe Denny at the Wyndham.
Maybe.
I might take Denny at the Wyndham. I thought he was going to get it done this week just on this sheer frat house. The frat house streak ends, which is a real shame for all of us.
I'm just thinking about hole outs. Like, what am I missing? Like, Rory hasn't had like a crazy hole. I mean, that the hole out that him and Colin Morikawa had at 18 were pretty cool.
That was sick.
That bunker.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a win. So much, like, those were like really cool hole outs. I'm just thinking about players now, like Xander.
Tiger's most iconic hole out, 16 at Augusta.
The Masters, yeah.
Yeah. That's probably the most memorable one we'd say,
Jackson,
right?
Just said Scotty's hole out from jail, but actually that was the day before, Jackson. That was the first day. It was the first hole of the PGA Championship that he holed out on the first hole. The next morning is when he got thrown in jail.
Yeah. And then walked out to many men, which is many people.
That's definitely a hole out though that comes to mind.
We should put some in the comments. We're struggling right now. Put some in the comments. Thank you in advance for your help. I'm sure we're forgetting so many of these. This was not like our debate over best drivable, like the Colin Morikawa, JD Spahn conversation. We know we're missing good hole outs. So send those to us. Smiley, here's the last place to end. We teased it a little bit earlier in the show. The 100 million FedEx Cup payouts changing significantly. I'm quoting from an article that Sean Zach wrote for golf.com, summarizing it. So just main points, total bonus pool remains at 100 million. No one's getting paid any less. It's just they're paying it out at different times. So the headline in this article here, regular season matters the most. A total of 20 million will be split among the top 10 players in the FedEx Cup at the conclusion of the regular season, which I guess is like almost layering on a bonus to the Comcast Business Tour for all intents and purposes. There are payouts for positioning after each of the playoff events. So like there's an additional $23 million that gets paid out after the BMW Championship based on standings there. And then the winner at East Lake, rather than winning, I guess it was the $25 or $30 million winner share last year, will win just $10 million for that week. Second place wins $5 million, so on and so forth. It's essentially a $40 million purse for the Tour Championship now. So face value, do we like this change? What do you think about this change?
Well, it's kind of what we expected to happen. I'm surprised it took a while for it to be rolled out. You would have thought this whole thing would have been rolled out when the Tour Championship was announced in the new format. So it definitely explains a lot, because it definitely maybe keeps a player like Scottie Scheffler or Rory McIlroy or a name another top 4 or 5 player on the FedEx Cup points to maybe want to play Memphis and BMW. They still might be able to get away with it with how far ahead they are, but got to remember, points are like quadrupled at the playoffs, so things definitely can get a little dicey when it comes to those top spots and how much money is on the line. Not to say these guys haven't made $1 jillion this year, but It is another factor for these guys to play. Rory's been rumored to not want to play Memphis this year. Golf course that he doesn't necessarily like. It's hot. So I don't expect to see Rory there this year, but I would assume that Scotty will play. Would have to think he'll play, right?
You'd assume. I mean, I think this is to some degree a spinoff of some of the ideas that we've talked about on the show. I mean, I think the first and foremost thing we've talked about is separating the regular season from the playoffs. And you know, there's a whole season worth of consistency that should be rewarded. Currently, you know, prior to this was rewarded heavily by the Comcast Business Tour, but we really didn't talk too much about that or make as big of a deal about that as maybe we should have. And now you're layering on that additional $20 million or whatever it is for playing well in the regular season, which I think is correct. It's like that's the thing, you know, if you're consistent throughout the entire season, why are we throwing a lot of that out the window and just letting people kind of randomize the finish order over the last three events and then having the money paid out that way? It doesn't make a ton of sense to me. I think that to your point on Rory skipping Memphis, that the way this seems to be paid out, I mean, the reason why he can afford to skip Memphis is because he's not going to move much, if at all, going from the first event to the second event. You know, if he was like on a certain
You wouldn't think so, right?
So the difference in what you're getting paid each stage will not be materially, you know, different. And so you can afford to skip that event still. And then it's in a lot of ways lessening the importance of the Tour Championship, because now we're doing away with starting strokes, and it's just a normal event that just happens to be paying out $10 million to the winner.
The other idea was that the ending of the PGA Tour season was supposed to entice some more of that 8 to 12 guys on the FedEx Cup list to want to play in Wyndham. But you've seen players that have really not even cared. But I was talking to Sahith Theegala on the putting green last year, who was a player that eventually ended up in that top 10. He was monitoring it very closely. So there are players that definitely take note of that ending of the regular season, $20 million.
I just think that what it boils down to for me, and this is just my opinion, I mean, I think a lot of people would probably disagree, is that it's always felt contrived in a way, you know, like this Tour Championship, this playoffs format. You know, we have the major tent posts of professional golf on a year-to-year basis. We have the four majors. Those are steeped in history. That's what people care about. We've had the history of the Ryder Cup, you know, for years and years and years. Like, these are forever going to be the events that people care about, that people watch the most, the support. You know, it's hard to just spring up this thing from you know, thin air, and then make the format weird and changing, you know, from year to year, and say you're supposed to care about this the most as like our season finale. I just don't think people really do care about it like that. James Colgan said it well when he came on the show, of like, you have, and what other league do you get to the playoffs and the TV ratings start declining? Like, it's the complete opposite. I think it sets the table in a way for sweeping change. Like, if you start lessening the value or importance of each of these events in terms of just the financial, the purse for them, then I think you create a window of opportunity to do some real reformatting of where it's played, what the format is if you go to match play down the road, because it's not like you're taking away this big thing from players of like, well, wait a second, I would like to play in the event where I could win $30 million for it. It's like, well, now it's less, and it has more to do with the whole playoffs at large. So I think it's correctly attributing the parts of this payment to the places they should go, but I think it continues to strip away importance and significance from the playoffs. And I think that's just kind of the state of where we are with this thing. It's like all these different formats didn't really work, and now we're back to one that's just, it's like vanilla ice cream. It's just, okay, we're just playing another tournament and you're getting paid more money.
I guess the contrarian side of this is that if I'm against the stroke play free-for-all tour championship, how can I be for match play? You know, that would make sense in that, you know, match play, it you know, a guy can get hot on you. You know, you judge an entire season on stroke play, and then all of a sudden, you know, Scottie Scheffler is going up against the 16 seed who's had a good year. but goes out and he loses. But what is so different about match play and stroke play from my perspective is I think that it's easier to follow. I think that you can always tell where it stands within the two players that are playing each other. And then you also get, I think, more energy and reactions from the players and just an overall sense of urgency right from the get-go, where a tour championship, it's just going to be like every other tournament. They're going to tiptoe their way along and just treat it, you know, when it'll get too high, when it'll get too low. Or with match play, it's, you know, it's part of the gamemanship of fist pumping and getting the momentum. And that's where I think the crowd it definitely could play a factor in whether it's an underdog or, bringing home Scottie Scheffler's three down. That's the aspect I think that the players have totally missed in this is that, of course, the players were part of the reason why match play hasn't worked, but couldn't agree more. Like you go to a big city with energy and then players that have a sense of urgency and match play to not want to go home. We just talked about there's plenty of money going out early enough and all this for the guys who play good throughout the season. So let's make this thing fun.
Yeah, and I agree with all that. And I think that's exactly, it's like, we just need to this needs to not be the playoffs anymore. It needs to be like a special fall series. Cause I guess if you're selling me as the tour on, you know, these high leverage stroke play events, it's like, okay, we already have four of those that we've already seen that we care about the most. And then even within a tour context, you already have one that leads off the year and Marsh that we care about more than any of the playoff events and the players. We love the players. It's a fantastic event. It's at a phenomenal venue. Like that I care about that more in that spot in the schedule. You know, the players kind of to your point, missing the what match play could represent is where match play fell on the calendar before. It was a great event. It was an elevated event, but a season ending high stakes match play event would generate so much intrigue and you could dude, really build something from nothing there.
Like you watch match play. Press,
oh,
and you watch and match
think
play.
About, think about this too. It's the same thing we've talked about with moving the Zurich Classic and the schedule. Wouldn't you love to see high leverage singles match play, you know, a month before you're going into a Ryder Cup or a President's Cup? And maybe
what
some
month
guys
are you talking about.
Well, like if you're having this match play at the end of August,
have
like
you
where
been
it falls on schedule?
To Louisiana in the end of August?
I'm saying now a tour championship doing match play at a tour championship, which also okay. Atlanta at the end of August. I mean, we do it every year. Also not great. But I mean,
I think really, Louisiana might be the hottest place in the world in August.
Well, I mean, but we were saying on the Zurich, to be fair, we were saying do the Zurich 2 weeks before. I mean, not that
September
is that
pretty
much
dang cool. Odd, too.
It's pretty dang odd, too. But my point being, if you make the tour championship match play and that's at the end of August, you know, at the end of September, you're going to see, you know, Europe versus the United States in match play or the United States against the internationals in match play. Like it gets you a little bit hyped up and excited for that. And I guess that's technically would be a week after the captain's picks are made as it's currently constituted. But maybe you push back that deadline till after the tour championship to make those last six captain's picks and see how those boys do, you know, and then maybe make some last minute calls based on how a guy does in a high leverage match for a ton of money. I just think it's like at least what you're doing there is creating a product that is distinct and has its own identity. That's not just like what we currently do, which is we just play three events, two of them are in the same place every year, one of them bounces around. Yeah, for a lot of money, so care about it
for
that.
They're going to change this thing. Like they're going to have to, and they will. It's just a shame that good for them for at least doing something different this year, but there's still so much meat left on this bone.
Well, and if I'm just being fair to everyone who's working on that side, like I think actually what they're doing is laying a roadmap to change it, right? Like they're stripping away all the format, you know, all the contrived format things. They're stripping away the dollar value. They're bringing it back down. So then I think it becomes easier to make a change from that place rather than the elevated place it has been. So we'll just
wouldn't
see how
you
goes.
Just rather just make one change, like one big old fat change versus, you know, a change every single year? Because sure, it gives us something to talk about, but I think fans are want the best product now and not, hey, sorry, you're in a deal with this corporate entity that wants this tournament in this place. And that's kind of where we're stuck right now.
I mean, if you really want me to get like my tinfoil conspiracy theorist hat on, now that I have this on firmly placed on my head, is, okay, you had to assume for some time that the tour wanted to have a succession plan for Jay Monahan, right? So, like, I don't know how long ago they started interviewing people or talking to guys like Brian Rolapp, but they probably know that there's going to be another guy who's going to come in who's going to reshape the future of this thing. So probably makes a lot more sense to kind of blank slate it instead of putting out the idea that was half-baked from Jay Monahan and maybe quarter-baked from Rolapp. It's like, let's just kind of zero this thing out, take it to a more neutral place, and then let the next regime decide what the best television product is and how they want to kind of reformat in the future. It's not clean for fans, but it's also probably makes most sense from an organizational perspective.
Yeah, I think so. So that'd be my line of thought. Interesting rollout, and can't wait to see Brian Campbell just splash across Pont de Vedra winning the tour championship this year.
This has been a really nice hour and 5 minute ride here. And I think in the course of this podcast, I started as like a negative naysayer. I'm all the way in on Brian Campbell. I want him to win at East Lake, and I just love a guy who's just hitting it out there straight, 276.
Did it you twice hit on it further than Brian?
I hit it further. I do. I also hit it a lot further right and a lot further left than him, and often in the context of the same round. So that is why I've not won twice on tour this year, among many other reasons.
I thought he was going to blow it after the he hit that hook on the 15th hole and made a double.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking while this ball was going into the trees, like, is he going to get the same bounce he got in the playoff? And this thing's going to ricochet back in the fairway. It didn't, but still he went on, got it done. So congrats, Brian.
I ordered a new putter on eBay.
What'd you go with?
I got, I was in the old Chatham shop 2 weekends ago and they had like that spider that's weighted to feel like a blade. I think it's like a spider. I can look it up. It's like spider. It's got like some 3-letter acronym on it.
So like weights. So the general weights in the heel of this. When you say it feels like a blade, so like it has more toe swing.
It's weighted towards the front of the face. FCG. Jackson's got a spider FCG. Look at Jax getting in the chat here with the Jax, text us and tell us if you like it or not. Yeah, I ordered a spider FCG. I'm very excited about it. I'm gonna borrow some weights from my current blade and throw those in there. We'll kind of weight it heavily in the front.
I'd have to roll a couple to know what you're kind of talking about.
I set it down. And it was like, I'll say it this way. Like I was in the shop and I was just grabbing putters as I always do. And I got like the Tour X, whatever the spider is that Rory and Scotty use. And it just, the way the stroke just flowed, it just didn't feel comfortable. And I was just messing around with all the other putters. And then I grabbed this one. I was like, this feels right. It was like, you know, like Harry Potter when they find him the right wand. You know, that's kind of how it felt. Picking up the spider FCG. So we'll report back. We'll let you know how it goes.
We've talked Princess Diaries. We've talked High School Musical. And there we are with the last one.
Please leave in the comments what you think of Zac Efron's jaw. Thank you so much for listening and watching to us as always. And we'll be right back here soon to recap the Scottish Open, to bring you some Open Championship preview. We got all sorts of things. Oh, and we have a premiere this week on YouTube of one of the best putting performances that Stephen Sweeney's ever seen in his studio, courtesy of one Smiley Kaufman. Excited about that one, SK.
Yeah, it's a good one. Can't wait to see it.
It's a good one. Can't wait to see it. Can't wait for you to see it. We'll talk to you back here very soon.
You know, I listen to this podcast. It's really cool. And
all of our first lovely time fans and subscribers, but make sure you like and subscribe.
It's cool to see what you guys are doing. I know golf fans appreciate it, but we do too, so please keep it up.
For all the good people at YouTube, like and subscribe.
You guys have some good takes, so I'm happy to come on and shoot the